ओम अज्ञानतिमिरंधस्य ज्ञानंजनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna has described how every living being in this material world receives different kinds of bodies according to his activities. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunte prakriti janguna karanam guna sangosya sarasadhyo nijanvisu. The jiva, purusha, situated in material energy, bhunte prakriti janguna, enjoys the results of activities within this material nature under the influence of the three modes of material nature, and attains various bodies which are considered better or worse according to his association with the modes of material nature. In various ways he is described. Urdvanga chanti sattvastha madhye tishtanti rajasa jaghanya guna vritti so adhoga chanti tamasaha. That those in the mode of goodness, they go up. Those in the rajagun, they remain in the middle position, and those in tamaguna, mode of ignorance, they go down. So in various ways he's described this, and he's also described that the Supreme Lord, namely himself, is overseeing everything in material nature. Maya dhyakshena prakriti suryate sacharacharam hetuna anena kontaya jagad viparivartate. That the whole material cosmos is going on under the control of the Supreme Lord. He also states that karma is very complex and difficult to understand. What is that verse? Karmano hyapi bodhavyam. Karmano hyapi bodhavyam akarmana. Now I'm forgetting the verse. Anyone know that verse? I forgot it. So anyway, the purport is that the intricacies of karma, action and reaction, are very difficult. Gahana karmano gatihi. It's very deep and difficult to understand the intricacies of action. Therefore, even great sages are sometimes bewildered. Even we find this question comes up when Dharma, the bull, was being beaten. What is the cause? Is the cause the sinfulness of the beater, or is it that the bull who is being beaten deserves this, or is it the influence of time, or is it this, or is it that, or is it the desire of the Supreme Lord? There are so many factors which could be cited. Anyway, in this verse, Lord Krishna says that whatever the various factors may be, everything is going on under the direction of the Supreme Lord. That's why Krishna, he creates a Hitler also. And Hitler, that Hitler person, he's also created by his own demoniac tendency. Someone had a demoniac tendency, and Krishna allowed him, as upadrashtanumanta cha, he sees everything and gives sanction. All right, let there be. All right, you want to be like that? Okay, you be Hitler. But also, not directly, but under the arrangement of the material nature, he puts certain living beings in that situation where some become brown shirts, or brown shirt, you know, that was Hitler's special. You don't know that history? They were particularly nasty members of his own private hit squad, you could say. And some are Jews,
or others who were persecuted by him. Or there's a plane crash. So all these people who have to die in this circumstance are all put together. And someone will just miss the plane. There's this, what is that? 9/11? And someone was scheduled to be on that flight, but he arrived at the airport and he missed the flight. And he's, I missed my flight. And then he hears, oh, lucky I missed the flight. That happened. My uncle, he was on honeymoon in Yugoslavia. And he missed his flight back. I mean, anyway, it's a minor convenience. He can get the next one. And that flight crashed and everyone of them got killed. And round the other way too, that in Bombay recently there were bomb blasts in the trains. And the brother of one of my disciples, usually he drove to work, but on that day he decided to go by train for some reason. And he got blasted to pieces, killed. So, how is this all going on? It's all going on under the direction of the material energy, which is under the direction of Ishvara, the controller. Here the word used is Ishvara. Krishna is Ishvara. But he doesn't say, I am controlling all living. And he says, the Supreme Lord is controlling. Sometimes he speaks in the third person. And people become confused. Why is he saying that? Maybe he's not God. Maybe he's talking about someone else. But he's referring to his position. So you don't get confused with his friendly function with Arjuna. He's referring to his position. Just like if I say that everyone should listen to the person who's sitting on the Vyasasa. I don't say everyone should listen to me, but you should listen to me because I'm not because it's me, but because I'm sitting on the Vyasasa. Or the Prime Minister should be properly respected. So he may be referring to some lapse in protocol and reminding that, well, I might seem to be like an ordinary person, and in many ways I might be, but actually I happen to be the Prime Minister, so you should respect the office properly. So in the same way, Krishna speaks in the third person. He doesn't say, I'm controlling everything, because Arjuna already, then he already had his doubt that aparam bhavato janma param janma vivasvataha katame tad vijaneyam tamado proktavaniti. Krishna said, I spoke. He said, imam vivasvate yogam proktavanahamavyam. I spoke to Vivasva. And then Arjuna said, you spoke, but you're born much later than Vivasva. So how can we understand that you spoke to him so long ago? So then Krishna's saying, well, the Supreme Lord is controlling. Otherwise Arjuna, he could ask that, well, you're controlling everything, but then why don't you just wipe out all these Kauravas and save me the fight, and then we won't have to speak Bhagavad Gita. Then everything will be, solve all my problem. But Krishna is saying here, things are more complex than you think, Arjuna. As Prabhupada writes in the purport, Arjuna was not the supreme knower, and his decision to fight or not to fight was confined to his limited discretion. Arjuna might think, well, Krishna's he's a good philosopher. But I'm also a pretty good philosopher. So, Krishna, what you said was pretty good. I respect your opinion, but, you know, I'm pretty intelligent too. So, I think my philosophy is better than your philosophy, and I'm not going to fight. But Krishna is reminding, beyond your tiny intelligence, there's the intelligence of the Supreme Lord. I'm not simply your friend, Arjuna. I'm the Supreme Lord. And there's a bigger picture than you can imagine. There are more reasons for you to fight than you can imagine. You should have faith that The Supreme Lord is all good, even though He may appear to be bad. People ask such a question that, well, if God is all good, why does He allow a Hitler? Why does He allow such a person? This one magazine, The Week in India, a few years ago, they brought out an article on Does God Exist? As if they're going to solve the question in their materialistic magazine. So they were asking all the wrong people. That's so stupid. Just asking anyone, all that kinds of different people. So as if it's like, you know, like that. Well, if God is all good, why does He allow a Hitler? Foolish. So anyway, one of the people they asked was a well-known lawyer and politician. Ram Jetlamani, I think that's how I pronounce it. So he said, well, I used to believe in God, but when I went to Gujarat and just after the earthquake and saw so many children trapped under the rubble, because there was one school where the children were at school, they were studying and there was the earthquake and they all got trapped under the rubble and they were all screaming and you couldn't rescue them and they died in great pain. And he said, then I doubted. How could God allow such a thing? Innocent children. So such doubts arise due to delusion. Arjuna couldn't imagine how Krishna could want him to fight and incur such sin as attacking and killing his gurus, leaving the wiping out his family, his whole dynasty, leaving the women unprotected. Arjuna couldn't imagine, but Krishna said, there's a bigger plan. It's my plan. Bhubhaharan, for the one of the reasons, Lord Vishnu, or the main reason, Krishna or Vishnu is invited by the demigods to appear in this world is to relieve, to take away the burden of the earth. So Krishna principally did this through the battle of Kurukshetra. And he told Arjuna that whether you fight or not, no one's going back to their homes. They're fighting for the sake of enjoying the kingdom, but they won't have any kingdom. They'll have to move on. With the exception of you, the Pandavas, and a few others. No one will return. They're all going to be killed, whether you fight or not. But it's my plan that you should fight. So, the lesson here is that we may have our plans, but the plan of the Supreme Lord is supreme. That we cannot act against that. And a devotee simply tries to act in consonance with the desire of the Supreme Lord. He does not go against the desire of the Supreme Lord. That is the difference between a devotee and a demon. A devotee tries to cooperate with this plan of the Supreme Lord, and a demon tries to fashion the world for his own sense gratification. So a devotee sees the plan of the Supreme, or even if he doesn't directly see, he accepts that Krishna has a plan. There must be a plan of Krishna greater than our ideas. In this material world, we're always trying to make some stable position wherein we can live peacefully. But there is no such position. However peacefully and nicely we may arrange, cruel death will shatter that position. So this desiring to, we desire to make a stable position wherein we can live very peacefully, but is not possible. And especially in the modern age, there's so much turbulence in society that it's very difficult to find any stability, even for a short period of time, everyone's always in anxiety. And even a very rich person, a very powerful person, their situation can be changed very quickly. They can be dragged down from their position. But even if they go through their life, rich and powerful, but a short life, it'll be over. Then they have to go to another position. So often it's very difficult to understand why. What is the hand of Krishna here? How is it that those innocent children screaming under the rubble and no one can... Because if you lift the rubble, more will fall down and crush them more. So there's not much you can do for them. It's just... Unless you had some crane to come and pick up the big pieces of rubble piece by piece, slowly, which you can't rush over to that remote part of India very quickly, and you can't help them. There's nothing you can do. The parents will be calling out to their child, and the child will be calling, nothing you can do. Just like the pigeon described in by Dattatreya in 11th canto of Bhagavatam, that description is there. The two pigeons, Kapota, Kapoti, father and mother, their darling pigeon children, they went out to get food for them. In the meantime, the little pigeons were running. They just started to fly, and they flew down to the ground, and they were playing around, and one fowler came and captured them in his net. And he knew that the parents must be there also, so he waited for them to come. So then the Kaputi, the mother pigeon, came, and she, seeing her darling children caught in the net, she fainted and fell in the net also. And then finally the male pigeon came. It's a very distressing story. And he said, "Oh, all that I've lived for, everything I've endeavored for, all my hopes, my wife who loved me so much, and our children who are the center of our lives, everything we live for, they're all captured." Then he also fainted and fell in the net. And the hunter thought, "Okay, very good, let's go home now." Took them all home, and his wife killed them, and they all had a nice meal. So, the distress of material life, it's difficult to understand that's story. And maybe I told this last time I was here. This one story was told to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur of one man whose daughter, his only daughter, beloved daughter, became very sick. And so he had his guru, but then all of a sudden he became very religious, full of bhakti for Gauranga. And he's always chanting, "Gora, Gora," and going to his guru and making special offerings and praying to Gora, "Gora, save my child." But anyway, she died in great suffering. So one of his friends who had seen him, he was become such a great devotee of Gora, he saw him again after some time. He said, "You're not chanting Gora now?" He said, "Gora? Gora? There's no such person. There's no such person as Gora. If there was any such God as Gora, he would have saved my child. I was so devoted to him. If he had saved her, she would have been a great devotee, and others would have become great devotees on seeing that. I do not believe there is any such person as Gora." So someone brought this story to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and he said that he never worshipped Gora. He was worshipping Satan in the name of Gora. He is not worshipping the Gora of Rupa Goswami, who prayed that, "Let me be like the chatak bird, who only accepts the rain from the cloud and no other." So in the same way, we'll only accept the mercy of Krishna. Whenever it comes, however it comes, we'll accept it. We won't go anywhere else. He was not worshipping the Gora of Srivast Thakur, who as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu every night in Shriva Sangha was chanting the holy names and dancing in ecstasy. Then one time the kirtan was going on and Shrivas heard some wailing from the women's quarters. So he went and said, "What's all this noise? What are you doing? Why are you making so much noise, disturbing the kirtan?" He said, "Well, your son died." He said, "Well, shut up and keep quiet. Don't disturb Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's dancing." So then after some time, they were going on, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stopped the kirtan and said, "I'm not feeling so much ecstasy. Something happened in this house. What happened? What happened? Anything happened, Srivas?" He said, No, you go on chanting. "Anything happened? Well, actually my son died, but anyway you go on chanting." So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was... Anyway, he brought the boy to life again, like in the Chitraketu story, and said that... Then the boy spoke and said that, "Yes, according to my karmic reactions, I have taken birth in this house, and now under your direction, Gaura, I am destined to go on. But I am so fortunate, I have passed away during your kirtan. So now wherever I may go, according to my destiny, according to my previous actions, I pray that I never forget your lotus feet." So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda said to Srivas that you are so much dedicated to me that you didn't want to disturb my kirtan, even your son died. So now you lost one son and you got two. Me and Nityananda, we have both become your sons. So Nityananda really became very much his son. Srivas, he was quite old, and Malini, his wife, was also quite old and her breast was dried up, but Nityananda, by his potency, revived it so that he, as in the mood of a young boy, would suckle her breast. So many wonderful things. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was pointing out that this is worship, or this is actual bhakti. Not that I shall employ Gaura as my gardener. And the rich men, they'll keep gardeners. They say, "Hey, come here, do this. Bring some vegetables. Why? What's this? What's this going on?" And they order him around. "So God, you do this. You bring my child. You save my child. Do this, do that. Save me. Bring some more money." So God is not to be employed as our gardener, or he is not the supplier of fuel for the burning fire of our material desires. So seeing the hand of Krishna in everything, it may be very difficult, because we are very attached to everything in this material world. We are attached to our situation. We are attached to our comfort. We are attached to our prestige. We are attached to people approving us. But if we are to serve Krishna, we may have to become poverty-stricken. We may have to accept that austerity. We may have to accept the austerity of becoming very rich. That's also an austerity, because then so many people bother you in so many ways. You may have to accept the austerity of being disliked. You may have to accept the austerity of being so much liked that you don't have the time even to eat or sleep practically. People all the time coming at you, coming towards you. According to Krishna's desire, devotee acts and accepts everything as Krishna's desire. Knowing that, ultimately, Krishna has his plan. We should understand what is Krishna's broader plan and try to act within that. Krishna's broader plan is prithivite ache chato nagaradi gram savatra pracha hoibe moranam. Krishna wants that Krishna consciousness be preached all over the world. And devotees, they should take part in that. They should endeavor to spread the movement of Krishna consciousness. But ultimately, everything is in Krishna's hands. If Krishna so desires, this should be our prayer. in Islam. If they ever have to say, tomorrow I shall go to Croatia, inshallah, I would say, if Allah, if the Supreme thus desires. Because we can't say tomorrow. We can say, tomorrow I shall go. Tomorrow I shall go. And even if there's a snowstorm, I shall go. It is ordained. No one, I shall. No, we can't say that. We don't know. There might not be any Croatia tomorrow. We don't know. Probably there will be, but maybe not. Or there may be Croatia, but I may not exist in this same body. So, to say I shall go to Croatia is overly presumptuous. We should remember that I can go if he desires. Ultimately, it's in his hand. So, devotees should have that faith that we have to act, but ultimately everything is his desire. To see the hand of God in everything. This is different from Stoicism. Stoicism means it's a kind of pessimistic outlook on life in which you just kind of accept that everything bad will happen and you just kind of, okay, all right, what to do? But rather, a devotee has the positive attitude of seeing Krishna's hand in everything and knowing that the hand of Krishna is all good, even if it appears to be not good. Just like in the case, Chitraketu, his son passed away, and Chitraketu was thinking this was a disaster. But actually, ultimately it was very good for him because he got transcendental knowledge. So, what may appear to be very bad to us may be Krishna's way of teaching us. We should see it like that. That all our endeavors, we tried so long to do something, and then all of a sudden, smashed, all the plans smashed. And you may see, oh, why is that? Krishna wanted to teach me that I am not the doer. Maybe I wanted to get the prestige and be praised for doing it, or I wasn't fully surrendered. Or Krishna wanted to cut my attachment. Always, if we see the hand of Krishna, especially devotees, that Mahatmanas, what's that verse before that? Mahatmanas tumang partha, daiving prakriti mashrita. Those who are Mahatmas, great souls, they are under the protection of the divine nature. They have full faith that Krishna is overseeing everything. Especially those who are surrendered souls, Krishna is overseeing them. We should have that faith. That for the karmis, they are those who are not accepting their relationship with Krishna, then they're also Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam, they're also under the control of Krishna, but more indirectly, more formally, you can say. They're being directed. Okay, you did this, okay, you get this result. So, but in the case of the devotees, because they have approached Krishna, Krishna is always arranging ways to bring them to him. So a devotee sees that in the unexpected waves of material, the waves and the whirlpools of the material ocean. You got that? The changing situation. There's a word in English, vicissitude. I don't know. It's a Latin word. Maybe you have it in your... No, it means like the changing, unexpected conditions of material existence which give trouble. So, in this trouble if we see that Krishna is, what is Krishna teaching me now? What are we to understand? How should I act now? That they're understanding there will always be so many difficulties, and even very horrible, it may appear very horrible situation. But as Prabhupada writes here in the purport, one thing is that everyone deserves what they get. That's one thing. You may say, well, the innocent children trapped. But although it may seem very harsh to say so, they deserve what they get. And you say, well, they didn't do anything wrong. But from a previous life, it must be there. People don't mind. At least in, I don't know here, but in England, when this idea came out, it was very much disliked. Means that there was one manager of the England football team. This must, I don't know, I saw him back to Godhead about maybe 10 years ago. And he said he believed in reincarnation, which among, you know, people who play football, you know, among them it's like as stupid as vegetarianism. It's, you know, they don't like this kind of thing. You know, for them there's, you know, their only philosophy is how to kick a ball. That's as far as it goes. How to run after it. So then some journalist thought, oh, here's a good story here. So he went and asked him, so do you believe that spastics, or whatever they call them nowadays, spastics, that nowadays they call them the physically challenged. They used to call them physically handicapped, and now they call it physically challenged, and after some time they'll have another word. They're always changing it. Because spastic, it's a description, and then that's a kind of then it becomes a derogatory term, so they change it to physically handicapped. Then that became a derogatory term, so now it's physically challenged. So then again they'll have to change it, because they're trying to make some language which is, you know, we're calling them that, but we're not really saying it in a bad way. But then everyone says it in a bad way. So then they have to, and it goes on. Stupid people. So do you believe that spastics are like that because of they did something wrong? It's their fault, they're not innocent. He said yes, and that was the end of his job. It's the England football manager, because there was so much protest. Oh, how can you say that? There's nothing wrong with them. They never did anything wrong. So in the protest, he had to lose his job as the England football manager. This prestigious job for fools. So people don't like this. Oh, they're suffering so much. How can you say it? So they must have done something wrong. Nothing happens by chance. We get different situations according to what we do, what we deserve. That's another thing, that no one wants to take responsibility for their actions. If something goes wrong, you blame this person, that person, every other person. You never blame yourself. Yes, it's my fault. No, it's his fault. Yeah, well, it's my fault, but, you know, it's actually someone else's fault because they didn't teach me properly, or someone else should have been overseeing me. Or who's going to take the responsibility? Not wanting to take it. So it's always someone else's fault. No, we get what we deserve. So a devotee's attitude is tattenu kampan susamikshamano bhunjana evadma kitam vipakam vridvadva pubevidatam namaste jiveta. Yo mukti pade sattaya bhag. That one who continues to live in this life and despite all difficulties goes on worshipping Krishna. And in all difficulty, in all material difficulties, thinks, this is simply the result of my previous sinful activities, but let me go on worshipping Krishna, whatever. So someone with that attitude, he doesn't blame anyone else, He doesn't say, well, I'm worshipping Krishna, so why doesn't Krishna cure my backache? Or I'm worshipping Krishna, and I've been worshipping Krishna for 3 years now, and I still don't have a better job. So I'll go to Sai Baba instead. Someone told me this. I went to this and I went to that and I tried Krishna also, but it wasn't until I went to Shirdi Sai Baba then, you see, so this is the real thing. But that's more illusion. There's Vasudev Vipra. He was suffering with little worms crawling in his body, with leprosy. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu touched him and gave him a beautiful body, and he prayed, now I'm going to become proud and my bhakti will be spoiled. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, don't worry, it's all right. I'll protect you. He was afraid that now my body is cured and now I'll become proud. I'm so beautiful now. And then my bhakti will be spoiled. So one who accepts the whatever happens, however harsh it may seem to be, such a person is in Krishna consciousness. And if we don't see the hand of Krishna, then we're not in Krishna consciousness. And if we do see the hand of Krishna and everything and go on with our Krishna consciousness, then we become, by that attitude alone, one becomes eligible to enter the kingdom of God. Some devotees were telling, they were on tour in Vrindavan area, and in Govardhan, in that area, their bus hit a young child and killed him, local child. So in most places in India, if you do that, it's especially in North India, UP, it's very dangerous. People come and burn your bus and extort lakhs of rupees. So the parents came and they said, well, he came at the feet of Govardhan. Govardhan gave him, and Govardhan has taken him. It's all his wish. They wouldn't even accept any money for the ritual ceremony has to be performed. That's pretty Krishna conscious, isn't it? I wonder how many of us could be so detached, seeing the hand of the Lord. It's shocking. You don't expect the beloved child, and then all of a sudden, gone. But to see the hand of I was telling the brother of one of my disciples was killed in a bomb blast. So then, when I got the news, I phoned him up, and then he said, well, can you say some words to my bhavi, means my older brother's wife? So I just started to speak to her, and then she couldn't say anything or hear anything. All she could do was cry, cry, cry. It's shocking. But one who can see the hand of the Lord, he remains undisturbed. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when he got news, he was in Mayapur, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was about to pass away. He got the news in the morning by telegram, but it was monsoon and there was heavy rain, and to cross, had to go to Calcutta, he had to cross from Mayapur to Navadweep, and then it's very difficult to get a boat in the heavy rain, and then the trains were delayed because of the rain, and he eventually reached there in the evening, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur had already passed away. And everyone was a big family, so they're all family members weeping and commotion, and then he saw his mother, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's wife, and she was very calm. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said to her that today is, it's not a day for distress. It's a day for rejoicing, because he has given us the, he came to this world to kindly give us the opportunity to serve him. And now he's giving us the opportunity to serve him even more. And from now on we should serve him even more, with more vigor and more energy. So he calmed everyone down and told them, and you stop thinking of him as Baba, our father. And he spoke all night on the glories of the pure devotional service of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. This transcendental vision. Of course, when a great devotee passes away, we feel the distress of separation, but that is not material distress. We should know Krishna has called him, Krishna has taken away. Prabhupada, he was lying on his bed in Vrindavan and devotees were begging him to stay. He said, well, it's all in Krishna's hands. If he wants, I'll stay. If not, no. So then the devotee said to him, but Prabhupada, Krishna will listen to you if you ask him, won't you? He said, yeah. So could you ask him if you can stay longer for us? And Prabhupada, he would be back and forth. Over the days, he would say, sometimes he would say, yes, I will stay, I will stay, I will live for hundreds of years. And we were thinking, oh, that's wonderful. And then he would say, no, I don't understand anymore. Now I want to go. So in this way, he was transcendentally teasing his disciples and torturing them. The mundaner would think, well, he's an old man. But he always accepted this. Krishna's plan. He said, he had heart attacks on the boat going to America. And he said, actually, that was my time up, according to normal calculation. But Krishna gave some extra time. He had something for me to do. So that injunction is given, one who claps his hand three times in the arati, all his fate changes. That means we come under the direction of Krishna. That's why I don't know anything about astrology, but I was told that there's no use to go to any karmi astrologer for a devotee, if you're actually a devotee. Of course, if you go to a karmi astrologer, then you're probably in karmi mood and you deserve to go there and deserve to get what you get. But they can't understand. You can't. Krishna's hand, you can't compute that. Krishna can do anything. He can change anything immediately. All the astrologers, just like we have so many astrologers, especially just before the year 2000, they were predicting so many things are going to happen. The world's going to end. There's going to be, what's that called? Earth shift. And then there's going to be an ice age. And then, so, you heard all that? Y2K and so many things they were predicting. But whether or not, it's all in the hands of Krishna. And undoubtedly, there will be wars and famines and uprisings and so many horrible things, because it's always going on. If you look in history, we're actually living in an amazingly peaceful period. There's probably, in the whole history of Europe, there's never been such a peaceful period. But when the cow dung hits the fan, it's really going to hit, because when the karmic reactions start to come in force, I mean, there's so much sinful reactions piled up. People are asking, why tsunami? Why earthquake? You know, why not? You think there should be more. It's amazing there's not more. Why terrorism? Why your terrorism, killing so many animals, torturing animals? They say Hitler was so bad, but the whole Western society is based on torturing and brutally murdering living entities. Cows, chickens, pigs, especially. Yeah. they're treated so badly, and humans also, how they're tortured, constantly bombarded with propaganda, buy this, buy that, work hard, take this intoxication, see this pornography. So torturing. So there must be reactions. And devotees, it's not the thing, well, I'll become a devotee and then, you know, everything will be nice materially. Nothing's ever nice materially. To think that there is going to be a nice materially, that's another kind of illusion. Of course, we don't deliberately try to make life nasty. And it is better if we try it. Prabhupada wanted to make this Varnashram society so people could live relatively peacefully and chant Hare Krishna. But even that, you can't tell. Even if you have a very peaceful situation, you don't know. Either from outside or inside, there may be so many disturbances. So a devotee, he sees the hand of Krishna and everything. That doesn't mean that he just becomes passive. It says Arjuna, he was Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hridesha Arjuna Tishrati Brahmayan Sarva Bhutani Yantra Arudhani Maya. Krishna was directly driving the yantra, the chariot of Arjuna. So he was directly directing him. But he didn't say to Arjuna, as Prabhupada often said, he often gave these examples, that Krishna didn't say to Arjuna, well, you know, Arjuna, I'm God, so you just go to sleep here on this chariot and I'll arrange everything. He said, no, you fight. I'm helping you from behind. He's standing behind Arjuna. But you have to fight. I want to see. I'm helping you, but you're serving me. Let's see how you do it. Let's see how surrendered you are. So Krishna was directly helping Arjuna. And Krishna told that my plan is there. No one will go back. Apart from you, the Pandavas and few others, no one will come back from this battlefield. So Krishna already had his plan, but he wanted to engage Arjuna in that, and Arjuna could choose to take part in that or not. Take part means he had to fight to the best of his ability. That was for his benefit. So in the same way, we should act to the best of our ability in Krishna's service. But know that the result is in Krishna's hands. And even if we think, well, I worked so hard to make this project, and it may not work, but then we should still see, well, that's Krishna's plan. I have to go on serving him. Just like Prabhupada, before he came to the West, he was trying so hard in India. He made the League of Devotees in Jhansi. He got some building, and it seemed that the building was very nice. And then it seemed everything was going on nicely, and then the wife of the governor of UP, a very powerful position, she decided that the building would be better used for helping displaced or poor women learn how to sew. And so she decided that this sadhu, he's only doing some puja. Let's do something useful. The sadhu can go anywhere. He shouldn't be attached to a building. So Mrs. Munshi threw him out, practically. So Prabhupada resisted that for some time, but then he saw it wasn't... He could have got involved in a court case and this and that, but he decided, all right, seems Krishna doesn't want me. There must be some other plan. He doesn't want this. So then he moved on, and he didn't have any really fixed place for some time. And he was at Radha. He was at Vamsi Gopal temple. Then he was staying in Radha Damodar temple. Then he went to the West, and Prabhupada was... He went first of all. Somehow or other, he was ready to go to Japan. There was some invitation to go to Japan. So it looked like he was going. It was all ready. He even had the paintings made, and this light of the Bhagavad that came as the book. But some at the last minute, it didn't work out. But Prabhupada, he went on. It's my duty to try. He went on trying. It's the order of my guru. I should preach all over the world. So let me try. And he went on trying. He went to Butler, Pennsylvania. He was there for some time, and then he went to New York. And from Prabhupada's books, it's from his first canto of Bhagavatam, it's clear that Prabhupada expected that the more educated and cultured class of people would take to Krishna consciousness. He was addressing the books to the leaders of society, because he said this is highly philosophical and very cultured, and naturally the more intelligent, intellectual class of people will take this up. But somehow or other, he, by Krishna's plan, as he saw it, he got the hippies, who were just about the opposite of what you could call cultured. So Prabhupada took it as Krishna's plan, and he set about making the hippies into the leaders of society, which they had dropped out of that society. They could drop into Prabhupada's movement because they were already outside. They were already outside what could be called normal society. So Prabhupada took it as Krishna's plan. Prabhupada even said that Krishna arranged the hippie movement to facilitate my preaching. Krishna's plan. You can never tell how it will work. And that's true also. So that's those who are on the front line preaching, distributing books, every day they go out, they know that now we're in Krishna's hands. And you don't know what's going to, right? You don't know what's going to happen. You have no idea. Even you're talking to someone and they might look like they're very enthusiastic. Oh yeah, very nice. And then they end up not buying the book. Or someone, you're not interested. And you're not listening. And the girlfriend's saying, nah, I'm tired. And they walk on, and then they turn around and say, how much was it? Okay. And again. You can never tell. You can never tell. It's not stereotype, that's for sure. And then how does the devotee, what is the technique for distributing books? Well, there may be so many techniques, but the main one, you know, Krishna's in their heart, pray. That's all, pray to Krishna. To say, you don't know what they're thinking, where they're coming from, what, you know, they pray to Krishna that let me say the thing that will appeal to them, that will trigger that reaction, that yes, all right, I want to take this book. And why distribute books at all? Sometimes devotees have the idea, well, you know, we distribute so many books, and what's the use? But in this respect, Prabhupada said, I blindly follow my Guru Maharaj. He wanted this. Prabhupada so many times said, this will change this society. In the Bhagavatam itself, it's Tadbhag Visargo, Janataga Viplavo, that this distribution of Srimad Bhagavatam will create a revolution in the misdirected lives of a sinful population. More than our whatever else we do. Of course, it's not that other programs shouldn't go on, but Prabhupada, he had more faith in the power of the book distribution. So you may say, well, what's the use? We distributed so many books. Yeah, we distributed so many books. Very good. Go on. Distribute more. That will change. We don't see the effect, but it's gradually purifying the whole population and preparing them for accepting Krishna consciousness. So to see the hand of Krishna in everything, that requires great advancement. But that is required to follow in the footsteps of Srivast Thakur. We may have to face very horrible situations. We don't know what will happen in our lives. Actually, the whole material existence is horrible, but then some people, they face something. Something may seem just like Srivas Thakur lost his child. Why should that be? He's a devotee. The Supreme Lord himself is personally present in his home. But Srivas accepted. All right. I don't understand, but it's his desire. He just accepted that. Now that doesn't mean we should be heartless. But when something is beyond our control, we know that let me not fight the plan of the Lord. I cannot fight the plan of the Lord. Let me cooperate with that. Let me accept that and go on with my service. This Abhimanyu, he was killed. Arjuna got the news and he became so distraught. So one man asked Prabhupada about this, that Arjuna, he was already taught Nahanyate Hanyamanesha Sharire, neither the soul is not killed nor is there a killer. And he was taught that Ashochan Anvasochastram Pragyavadam Shibasasi Gatasana Gatasancha Nanu Shochanti Pandita. One who is learned, he doesn't lament for the body. So why did Arjuna become so upset? So Prabhupada explained, well, that's natural to become, to have your son you're very affectionate toward. But Arjuna didn't give up his, that Arjuna was fixed in transcendental knowledge, he didn't give up his purpose of serving Krishna. So that is the test. It's not that we become callous and don't care. Of course, it might have seemed like that in the case of Srivas Thakur. But in his case, he cared more that Lord Chaitanya's ecstasy not be disturbed. He was philosophically situated that anyway, Lord Chaitanya gave the son and he took him away, just like a Govardhan. Those people said, Govardhan brought him into this world and now it's time for him to go. So they could understand like that. But it's not surprising if someone is attached, but then not to give up our service to Krishna because of whatever happens in this world. We have to go on serving Krishna and understand that Krishna has some purpose. And actually Krishna explained that to Arjuna, that this Abhimanyu, he was formerly in a higher planet, but he was forced to come to this earth. He had some obligation. But then only for this fixed time, 16 years. So his time was up, he had to go. So he went gloriously. So no cause for lamentation. Kirtiryasya sajivati. He lives on even now by his glory. So this learning to see Krishna's hand is very useful in our whole day-to-day life and in our execution of Krishna consciousness, that there must be some plan of Krishna's. Let me not fight that. If there's something we can't change, then what to do? It must be Krishna's plan. But let me go on with my service. That doesn't mean that we just accept all kinds of Maya. We have to fight against Maya. That as Arjuna was fighting against the illusion in the form of the Kauravas who were against Krishna. So it is our duty to fight against Maya attacking from outside and attacking from within. It's not that we just say, just like someone was saying to me yesterday, that time to time I get these strong attacks of lust, and I asked other devotees and they say, well, it's natural. And I say, well, it's not natural. That's the symptom of the conditioned soul. So it may be natural from one perspective, but Krishna consciousness means we have to come to higher consciousness. If we just say it's natural and it's going to go on, well, that means how are we ever going to become purified? If you say, well, it's just natural, so just accept lust, so, you know, it's just there, so, okay, all right. But then the process of Krishna consciousness is meant for purification. So we should take up the process and pray to Krishna, pray to Nrisimhadeva for purification. It may seem as if it's natural, But it's not natural for the jiva. It's natural for the jiva to be free of lust. So we should come to higher consciousness following the instructions of Shastra. So, when these attacks come, or most of the time, probably. So, in one form or another. But on one hand, we understand that, well, it's inevitable because of my sinful propensity. But on the other hand, we have to take shelter of Krishna by chanting his names, by following the process of bhakti yoga, and with the faith that Krishna will purify us if we sincerely take shelter of him. But if these feelings are overwhelming me, we should understand that's because of my previous sinful activities that I'm affected by such a mentality. But this is the opportunity for me to take shelter of Krishna more. Instead of surrendering to those sinful desires, now I have to catch hold very strongly of Krishna's lotus feet to be protected from those sinful desires. So, various circumstances come about, and we are in various circumstances due to our previous activities, but how we respond to them is the test. How we respond, if we simply, we can respond to any circumstance by succumbing to the temptation of Maya, or we can respond by catching hold of the lotus feet of Krishna in devotional service. Every moment is a test. And if we take shelter of Krishna, then again Maya will test more, and test more, and test more, and test more. The tests will go on. And if we see everything as a test, difficult situation is a test, and if we may get some very materially nice situation, that's also a test. Just like Sudama Vipra, he was so poor, but in his poverty, he never blamed Krishna. He thought, well, Krishna's so kind, he's keeping me in poverty, because I would misuse opulent circumstances. He knows I would probably misuse opulent circumstances. So he's very kindly keeping me in poverty so that I can not be deluded by opulence. Then he got fabulous opulence. And he prayed to Krishna that now let my mind not be deluded, and he used everything in Krishna's service. That's a test also. Either way, either in opulence or poverty or in between, everything's a test. How we respond, how we will use everything for Krishna. We use everything for Krishna as best we can, and then Krishna certainly reciprocates. He might reciprocate by giving us all facilities for devotional service, or he may reciprocate by giving us so many difficulties. And even Krishna gave Prabhupada so many facilities for devotional service, but it wasn't without difficulty. In fact, the more facilities you get for devotional service, then automatically the difficulties come with it. If you just have a traveling Sankirtan party, well, that has its difficulties, no doubt. But life is relatively simple. But then you get a big building like this, and then to manage it, and then everyone staking some claim on it, and we should use this and that, and more difficulties. So, but then you have to see, Krishna is given, we have to use for his service. So accepting facility in Krishna's service, we may think that, if we think now we can live very comfortably, then that will be the cause of great distress, because everyone will think, well, they're living comfortably, I want to live comfortably too. I want to take part of that building for my own comfort. And then everyone fights, as you have experienced. But then when you think, actually this building should be used only for pure devotional service to Krishna, then it becomes Vaikuntha. But as long as we're thinking, well, you know, I did this, and I deserve this, and it belongs to me, then everyone's distressed. But as soon as we think, no, everything should be utilized for Krishna only, Krishnarte Akila Cheshta, all our endeavors should be for Krishna only, then everyone becomes satisfied. Doesn't mean that there's not difficulty. Still you have to consider so many things. So many difficulties will come, but that is the burden that devotees accept in Krishna's service. Hare Krishna. I'll finish here. Are there any questions?
You have mentioned that we have two chances: to succumb to the temptations of Maya or to surrender unto Krishna.
Yeah.
And what if in the moment of the test, the surrendering unto Krishna doesn't work?
Surrendering to Krishna doesn't work, it always works.
No, I mean,
if we don't see that, if we don't, we should have the faith that, you see, we can't judge whether it, just like Prabhupada says here, Arjuna was not the supreme knower, and his decision to fight or not fight was confined to his limited discretion. So what we think works, we don't know. Our duty is to surrender to Krishna with the faith that he will reciprocate with that and accept that. We can't judge whether it's working according to our own limited discretion. But our duty is to surrender. And then leave everything up to him. Sometimes we hear it said that, well, someone, he was executing devotional service for a few years, but then after that, he couldn't follow anymore. Couldn't follow? What happened? Someone came with a gun and told him, don't chant 16 rounds anymore? What is this? He couldn't follow. I can't follow anymore. You can't? What is this? It's an excuse. You can, but you don't want to. That's what it comes down to. You've made a decision not to. To say, I can't follow anymore. What is the meaning of that? Krishna's not allowing you? It's an excuse. Yeah, anything else?
You mentioned the discussion while the bull Dharma was beaten.
Yeah.
So, I was wondering what was answered.
Well, the bull Dharma himself said, he said that ultimately everything is the same thing. Everything, ultimately everything is the plan of the Supreme Lord, whose plan is inscrutable. You may say this is the cause or that is the cause, but ultimately everything is the plan of the Supreme Lord, which we have to go along with. Prabhupada, he told that during the war in Calcutta, Second World War, bombs were dropping just as he was beginning to take his prasadam. And they were calling, come to the bomb shelter. What was that? I'll take prasadam first. And okay. He said, the bombs are coming. And I was saying, this is also Krishna in another form. Who has got that vision? Not so easy, huh? Then, anything else? How to increase this determination? You have determination? You have to have determination, otherwise you can't increase it. If you're not determined, then... If you're determined, you're determined. If you're not determined, you're not determined. So, how can you increase it? Rise early every morning, chant the holy names attentively, follow the standard process of Krishna consciousness. And when Prabhupada is asked, well, What if we don't have the determination to do that? And Prabhupada said, then you are an animal. Because you promised to follow. And if you don't follow the promise, then you're not even a human being. That was Prabhupada's reply. When you take initiation, you state your determination. So you're supposed to stick to that. Any other question, ladies? So, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srimad Bhagavad Gita.